and the Uniparty is in strong agreement here. Both know that losing control of the money and the banks is an existential threat to their aristocratic and unaccountable powers. Sure, this all sounds like a lot of change and a lot of risk and a wildly new set of systems, but you're not going to fix that which has become this broken without change. The mal and misincentives are far too great, and the entrenched interests like it this way. And it's going to break. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a really, really fun article today. This one is not about Bitcoin. In fact, at multiple points in this article, he talks about the author, Elgato, talks about how Bitcoin is not compatible with what he is saying, which is funny because the reason I love this article is because he makes such a great argument for all of the things that are possible only because of Bitcoin. The most interesting thing about this is that he establishes something in the article, in the actual article, that explains why this system won't work. Loosely, I'll say, he loosely establishes or hints at a reality, a systemic problem with this system that actually is solved by Bitcoin. And it's something that we've talked about at length in numerous different episodes in how trust relates to Bitcoin. And I think really what the author is actually missing here with the relation to Bitcoin is that he seems to think that the argument for Bitcoin is built up from potentially what has just been exposed, what he's just been exposed to on Twitter in 280 character tweets. Like, if I had to come up with like the shallowest idea, like just what crypto bros and, you know, what you would probably get in your feed if you're outside of the Bitcoin space and you don't actually like, you're not like deep diving into some of these concepts by the real thinkers and the people who talk about the game theory and the in-depth ideation on like what it actually enables in a market and what levels of credit and trust are likely and the potential size of those markets in a Bitcoin space and how Bitcoin actually is essentially the glue to hold that together. If you're not digging into all of that, I can easily see a perfectly sensible picture of why Elgato sees Bitcoin the way that he seems to see Bitcoin in this article. But the article itself is a great breakdown of what a free banking system might look like. And I think it's really fun. Well, actually, he makes the case in the article that we're kind of past the point of needing to be thinking about what it might be like to have a system that replaces the current system, because we actually need to be building it. But what's funny is the case that I will make afterward, or in the guy's take to follow this, is that we are building. That is exactly what's being built. And it's exactly what crypto has completely failed to understand and why they have been moving in the exact wrong direction for so long. But I don't want to lead the article too much and, you know, talk about it, because it's just a really good article. And also a shout out to Clarkian. We hang out in a couple of the Keat rooms together, and he actually pointed this out to me and apparently sent it or tagged me in some other thing. So thank you for refreshing that, because I really did enjoy this article. And I think this is going to make for a really, really fun discussion. And hopefully Elgato listens to it. The guy's take will be will follow this episode, but I'm going to make the case in a short segment after we do the read as to why Elgato, if you are listening to this, why I really, really hope that you listen to the follow-up where I talk about a lot of the principles that I think will actually answer where I believe that you have misunderstandings of what a Bitcoin economy is going to look like. And you may be mistaking what a bunch of cheap supporters, like frivolous kind of social media loud supporters of Bitcoiners, of Bitcoin on Twitter, say about what Bitcoin is and what Bitcoin actually is. And that is what we do on this show. Granted, we really just cover it all. But with that, I've gone on too long. Let's thank our sponsors really quick, and then we will jump into the read. You know them. You love them. Swan Bitcoin. Now, you know they are the best onboarding service. You know they are the place to get a long-term savings plan. You know they are the place to learn everything you need to know about Bitcoin. But you might not realize that you can get your retirement in a matter of minutes allocated into Bitcoin, real Bitcoin, tax-free, with the Swan IRA. Go to swan.com/IRA if you have not checked this out yet. If you have a traditional retirement, you need to check it out. Then when you get your Bitcoin from Swan, you're going to want to put it on a cold card. You want to put it on a hardware wallet that you control, that is secure, that you are sovereign with. CoinKite makes all of the best Bitcoin hardware devices, as well as just awesome Bitcoin products and tools. And lucky you can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible. And then lastly, the Fold card. Who just announced an exclusive global partnership with Visa, and they are bringing the Bitcoin debit card, the Fold debit card, finally to tons of other places in the world. The long-awaited win, not the USA, on the Fold card. It is happening. So stay tuned on that. I am very eager. I literally just saw this on Bitcoin Magazine. I didn't even talk to anybody. So I'm going to try to find out some more details. I'll let you guys know. But you know, the debit card, the Fold debit card, is the way to get sats back on everything in your life, because I talk about it relentlessly. And I had a big bill come in today and I got 3% back on it. And it was so great. 20,000 sats for free. Going to bitcoinaudible.com/fold. The link for your convenience will be in the description. With that, let's get into today's article. And it's titled, How to Fix Banking and Money, PBDC versus CBDC. Written by Elgato Malo. Economist philosopher Thomas Sowell once said, quote, "It is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting those decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong." And the man undeniably has a point. And while I would certainly not try to argue that such an august observer of events and human nature was wrong, I would opine that we can extend this thinking a bit. Because some things do seem to be more stupid and more dangerous. 1. Putting decisions in the hands of those who actually benefit from being wrong, or whose interests lie in opposition to those of the people they are supposed to serve. And 2, constraining the decisions of those who are going to pay the price for bad policy by denying them the agency and information they need to make sound choices, thereby creating monocultures of non-adaptive misbehavior in places where markets should be. And I would go so far as to assert that these points are the literal foundations of our modern monetary and banking systems. Government ownership and monopolization and regulation of these institutions is not the solution. It is the problem. They are neither capable nor qualified to provide or guarantee such systems, and would not be incentivized to, even if they were. When governments guarantee banks, all you get is guaranteed crisis. Why not? Games are private, rescue plans are collectivist, and money printers go brrrr. It's a horrendous system of incentives. We have fundamentally set the idea of sound money in opposition to sound banking, and have wound up with that most classic of governmental outcomes: neither. And this is an easy problem to solve. You just need markets and not monopolies. And yes, mandatory regulation, accreditation, and chartering of financial actors and institutions is just another form of monopoly. And this is a problem that we're going to have to solve, because the existing systems are going to fail, bigly, and perhaps far sooner than people realize. And there is not much can left to kick, nor road down which to kick it. The current corner into which much of the West is painted is going to become increasingly obvious, and the only way out from under hundreds of trillions in unfunded liabilities is Weimar/Zimbabwean hyperinflation or depression. You can probably manage to get both if you try. This is, after all, government we're talking about. So we need a plan, and sharpish. So let's lay out a couple of key salients and talk about how to get there. 1. We want sound currency that retains value over time and is useful as a medium of account, exchange, and savings. 2. We want a banking system that is sound and stable, not prone to runs, crashes, or speculative excesses, and that can verifiably demonstrate those traits, instead of appearing the black box that will one day explode. Again. We must accomplish this knowing several things that simply cannot be changed. 1. Governments are astonishingly untrustworthy stewards of fiat currencies, and we are not going to get, quote, smarter guys next time. 2. Fractional reserve banking is an inherently risky course and prone to credit risk, rate risk, and duration mismatch. 3. Banking regulators have pretty much nowhere evidenced any ability to mitigate this, and we are not going to get, quote, smarter guys next time. 4. And the availability and extent of bailouts creates massive moral hazard that enables and encourages excess risk-taking, which combines in toxic fashion with monocultures of risk management and risk tolerance that keeps manifesting as systemic danger, especially and always when banks are required to lend for reasons other than creditworthiness by the government permissions upon which their existence and operation depends. Okay, quite a lot there, so let's dig in starting from a high level and working down. The gold standard was a problematic institution. It set off more than a few balance of payments crises. It also diverted activity toward finding, plundering, and refining shiny rocks, and away from more productive uses. But it did manage to keep price levels fairly stable. This has most emphatically not been the case since, as governments got addicted to printing versus living within their means, and the Cantillon cronies all got fat off of it. But you can only take that so far. Since 1956, the US dollar has lost 90% of its value. The Swiss franc, one of the better and more reputable currencies, has lost 80%. So it's not like anyone is covering themselves in glory here. And inflationary systems lead to more risk-taking, and a need to constantly put money to work because its value evaporates. You need to run to stand still. This Red Queen aspect represents an artificial pressure on a system and likely a fundamental tendency towards overinvestment, overlending, and too much risk. And when you add piles of cash to a system, you mostly wind up getting asset bubbles and vast numbers of money-losing businesses. Of course, a currency that increases in value over time might even be worse, because no one will want to lend it. You can just sit on piles of money and grow wealthier in real terms, and so you underinvest, especially as the price of real assets drops in nominal terms. Imagine buying a house that you knew was going to drop in nominal value. I'm not sure I've ever seen a ton of really rigorous work on it, hard in a case absent the factual, but theoretically, what we, the people, the savers, the users of money, the inhabitants of the resultant economy, likely want is something that keeps its value pretty constant. This gives you a neutral bias, free from arbitrary driver and incentive. Obviously, you cannot trust the government to provide this. That's been one of the worst bets in recorded history. So we're talking about private money, which makes sense. It's us we care about, and a private market will seek to serve us, whereas a government will seek to serve itself. Governments like printing money, to spend what they do not have, and governments like inflation because it devalues their debts, and increases the tax base, because things you buy rise in price and so you have capital gains when you sell. Of course, it also swells their unfunded liabilities, but this gets seen as, quote, long run, and is therefore ignored until it makes the whole house fall down. Coming soon to an OECD nation near you. So how do we create private money? Private issuers. I'm now going to upset the Bitcoin maxis and other crypto bros and talk about what we ideally need in money. It needs to be stable, secure, private, reliable, and scalable. And I just do not see BTC getting there. I'm a big believer in crypto as an idea, but I think these are 1.0 products that have not reached minimum product viability and never will without fundamental redesign. Read footnote for more. Personally, my abiding suspicion is that the trustless peer-to-peer systems are inherently problematic because trust in systems of commerce and payment is a feature, not a bug, at least at the edge. Removing it is a form of taking the wheels off the trebuchet, where a vital piece of a system is unwittingly removed because its importance was not understood. We want someone to trust in a financial system. You want a financial system you can trust. This evolved as emergent positive practice because it works. Ask anyone who ever had their BTC or ETH or clown coin or whatever hacked and stolen. There is no one who can give it back. It's like losing cash. Why do we spend so freely online? Because if merchants act badly, Visa, MasterCard, and Amex have your back. And the reversibility of charges keeps people on their best behavior. And yes, perhaps you could set up a similar system for BTC and pay a percent of the transaction fee to an escrow agent or a processor, but now you're trusting someone, aren't you? And it's likely to cost more than current systems because it is not truly reversible, so your guarantor is more deeply on the hook and less likely, therefore, to want to take your side. What you really want are known, knowable, and trusted rules, processes, and counterparties that give you maximum predictability, safety, and fairness. You want to do business with someone whose reputation for square dealing is worth more to them than anything they could steal from you. You want to know what's going to happen, and you want it to happen in fair fashion and with alacrity and low friction. This is why companies incorporate in Delaware and use Delaware law, because the body of law there is robust, even-handed, and the chancellery there is no joke. They pinned even Elon the legal eel to the wall in short order. And this is why people trust them. And this level of systemic trust is very useful to make the world work. Trust is a feature in commercial ecosystems, and a really, really valuable one.
See here, my good man, we're going to need a bit more transparency.
So how do we impart this into the banking world? By now, you all know my sponsor, Swan Bitcoin. But there is something new that you might not know about yet. Bitcoin is generational wealth, and now you can get your IRA and traditional retirement into Bitcoin with the Swan IRA. This is real Bitcoin. Tax-free, Swan offers both traditional and Roth options, so it's going to be whatever best fits what your setup is. You create your IRA, and you can start adding Bitcoin to it in less than a minute. It really is that simple, and then transfers and rollovers are also available. And Swan has built an insanely knowledgeable team. Like, these guys know Bitcoin, and they know what they are doing, and they have the time preference and the mindset to do this right. And they can get you set up with no transfer fees and no minimum balance requirements. Again, this is real Bitcoin. This is not an ETF. This is not some other derivative. This is the real thing. Get real Bitcoin, get it in your IRA tax-free, and do it at Swan. Go to swan.com/IRA for more details, and I will have the link conveniently in the show notes. Man, you wouldn't think that you'd find it there, but it's like it's in the show notes just like it was in the last episode. Wow. Now with that, let's get back into the read. So how do we impart this into the banking world? We free the banks from federal oversight, create a real market for them and for bank-like entities, BLEs, where they have to compete for us and our patronage, and we give them the ability to set interest rates and issue currency. We make currency a product like any other product, and we let them duke it out to see who can make a compelling case and develop a reputation for stability, soundness, and fair dealing. Central Bank Digital Currency, or CBDC, will be a disaster of dystopian dominance and the bending of banking to non-banking ends. But private bank-like entity digital currency, or PBDC, could be the path to financial liberation and to real, no fooling around banking privacy. Blockchain systems have an inherent challenge in that transactional cost is the underpinning of security. And without trust, you have to really spend to keep it anything like safe. If a block were easy to discover and mine, then you could easily take the whole system down with fraud or spam. So you have to make the math complex, but this makes the processing expensive and scalability difficult or impossible. So you look to layer 2 to add more chains that settle more transactions, and then take the summative result and post it to the main chain. But because it is a trustless system, you still have the same security cost issues. You can spread it around, but until you trust someone, security is expensive. But what if you do trust someone? Now security is easy, because transactions take place behind the firewall of a trusted party. You come to Bank of Gato, and you pay someone else with an account there with Gato Bucks. Or you instruct Bank of Gato to send Gato Bucks to the infamous Perobank, because you bought a car from a dog, and unlike BTC, no one can see whose funds they are, and wallets are not public, and neither are transactions between banks. It's just encrypted data traffic. Or, more likely, you use your Gato card to buy lunch at Ches Snude, and the whole thing gets settled later with some bank whose name you'll probably never know and honestly could not care less about. You just want to buy stuff and have it work, and you just want bank accounts that are safe, reliable, and always on. And banks and BLEs are really good at doing and settling transactions with one another if you actually freaking let them, and security is outward-facing instead of transaction-associated, so that costs do not scale with volume. So how do we do this without government systems and government currency? How do we design and build this system? We don't. We let it build itself as an emergent order market driven by a need to serve customers. Start here. Any BLE can incorporate, take deposits, make loans, and issue currency. They have no governmental reporting requirements whatsoever. Wow, sounds scary, right? They could be lunatics. They could be fraudsters. They could be deeply unwise or misassess risks. How are you supposed to know? Probably you can't. But does that mean you're giving anything up? It's not like you can now. Do you have any idea what your bank owns, owes, and gets up to? No. It's a black box. You're trusting a regulator to make it safe and a government to back it up.
How's that working out for you?
And I think we can do better. And so the question becomes, who is better to oversee and watch a greedy banker than a regulator who not only pays no price for being wrong, but that gains new power every crisis? And the answer is simple. More greedy bankers who stand to lose their butts and Hampton homes if their counterparties blow up. And that's easy to do. You just need the right system. Banks actually used to run like this. You'd have 10 banks in a city, each issuing their own scrip, or currency, and each agreeing to clear the scrip of the others. So Bank of Gato takes in Pero dollars, collected at the restaurants who bank with us, and then clears them with Pero Bank in exchange for Gato Bucks or other sources of value. Banks used to do this all day, every day, and settle up multiple times and at day's end. They did this on freaking paper in an age not only before computers, but back when, quote, calculator was a job title for a human, not a device. There's nothing hard about it. In the modern age, it's trivial. You just need to allow it and incentivize it. And the incentives are simple. As a bank, you want your script to be widely accepted, so you need other banks to clear it, and so you clear them as well in reciprocal agreements. This builds into networks that tend to iteratively find optimal currency numbers and areas. But how are banks to trust one another? How is Bank of Gato to know that some dirty dog is not recklessly printing Pero dollars in the basement and debasing the value while making bad loans? The same way they used to. Mutual audit rights. Regulators cannot keep up with banks. They are always 20 yards behind the play, fighting the last war, except when they are out in front inciting the next crisis. But banks can keep up with each other. So if you want trust, verify. Banks used to do this. They would inspect each other's books, count the scrip issued, check out the loans, the holdings, the deposits, the depositors. Everyone watched everyone, because the price of getting it wrong was, remember that bank you used to have? When you took a bunch of dodgy dog bones you mistook for good money. And they were good at it. The system hummed along without crisis or calamity. It's sort of obvious when you see it. If you want to keep an eye on a greedy banker, who better than a similarly greedy banker who stands to get hosed if bankers do something stupid or unsafe? There is absolutely nothing wrong with self-interest in economic systems. It's what makes them work and what drives the Pareto optimality of markets. It's quite literally vital and integral to their proper functioning. And we can make this into a safety feature rather than a risk factor. We just need to design systems where those making choices face the consequences of their choices, good and hard. You don't need to know how to regulate a bank and make it safe. Regulators do not need to know how to regulate a bank and keep it safe. Because banks know how to regulate banks and keep them safe. So let's force them into the job by pulling out all the safety nets and guardrails. And as long as they are watching each other and have miles of skin in the game because they are clearing each other's currencies and no one is going to come save them because no one can print these currencies willy-nilly and stay in the system, you can trust them to do this all day long and twice on Sunday. They can offer deposit insurance from outside sources and monitor it. It should be quite cheap given the open books and safety we're going to demand here. And sure, banks and currencies will fail. But to be in the clearing systems, you're going to need to sustain and show the ability for an orderly unwind at all times, so that if you do, no one gets hurt and everyone gets made whole with assets they are okay taking as money good. You're going to get a system of incredible stability, transparency, and function because it's competing to provide those things, and competition breeds competence. It will replace the one-size-fits-basically-no-one system of regulate and hope then print when you screw up with a system of consumer sovereignty, where banks not only have to earn your trust, crazy idea, I know, by actually being trustworthy, but to find ways to verifiably prove it. Care to wager they spin out their investment banking and prop trading divisions faster than you can say, get this leverage off my sheets? To get into these clearing systems will take transparency and stability. It will also allow all kinds of really interesting experimentation. Do we want asset-backed currencies? Maybe. I'm sure folks will try it in the classical senses. Can we find new intriguing ways to back a currency? I would think so. I've long been fascinated by the idea of utilities as BLEs with currencies backed by something tangible, like megawatt hours of electricity delivered 1 month or 1 year from the date of redemption. It's a fascinating idea as it incentivizes low-cost electricity production, adding enough but not too much power to match future demand. And there will always be buyers who want to, quote, buy and burn the currency if it drops in value, so will remain pretty stable. It's also a quantity that tends to grow with GDP. Dozens of other ideas seem possible, plausible, and desirable. We build webs of internally verifiable trust based on mutual need not to have counterparties fail, set banks and BLEs to watch one another, and sit back and enjoy the rise of PBDC that will tailor itself to every need. Want to do transactions under Belgian law? Fine, do the transaction in that location. Want to get paid behind a firewall in the Caymans? Done. No one will ever know but you and your numbered account. Want to enable small banking jurisdictions to compete, to innovate, and create better and lower friction systems of specially suited legal and transactional systems to serve a variety of needs and keep bossy pants government ESG edicts away from your hard-earned dosh? You got it. Welcome to markets. You're going to like it here. Banks are not kept massively regulated and overseen by government to make them safe. It's done to keep them compliant and keep the federales able to snoop upon and seize that which is yours, not theirs. It's the primary underpinning of state power. And CBDC is a savage step in this direction. But PBDC is the huge step away from it and toward a world where money, savings, and commerce become the province of we the people and opaque to the states that have for centuries stolen and plundered with impunity by virtue of being the biggest bully on the block and not letting you have any privacy. But it's hard to tax that which you cannot see, and this would represent a large divergence with most of human history and begin to make us citizens and customers instead of subjects and serfs. And maybe we don't want to live like this anymore. Peasant: I cannot pay. These taxes are unfair. Lord: You talk a lot of shit for someone with such a flammable house. Oh, but the criminals will... Let me stop you right there. They already are. They always will. It cannot be stopped or even moderated. It's just a make-believe bugbear like the war on drugs pretending it's anything but price supports for bad actors and a perpetrator of violence-driven black markets and products that are more dangerous than they need to be. And criminals already run this system. You may just know them by other names. Have you not noticed who is running your government? It's just that society-scale economic plunder winds up being a bit like treason. If it doth profit, none dare call it plunder. And the Uniparty is in strong agreement here. Both know that losing control of the money and the banks is an existential threat to their aristocratic and unaccountable powers. Sure, this all sounds like a lot of change and a lot of risk and a wildly new set of systems, but you're not going to fix that which has become this broken without change. The mal and misincentives are far too great, and the entrenched interests like it this way. And it's going to break. How can the U.S. possibly meet its unfunded liability obligations? It can't. How can banks survive in an environment this capricious and demanding? They can't. Things are going to break. And when they do, it will be good to have a plan. If I were a clever small jurisdiction with strong banking secrecy laws looking to position myself well for the coming decades, I'd be jumping into this with both feet. Now is the time to get this ball rolling. The big dominant countries are painted into corners, and the opportunity to be the clever little critters that eat all the dinosaur eggs is perhaps the most interesting thing in the world right now. If you need a finance minister, I know a gatto that would pick up the phone. All right, that wraps up the read, and I really wish I had time. There's two reasons why I don't have time. One, I don't really have that much time to do the guy's take here. But the other reason is because there is so much to unpack in this. And there is so much. It's funny. There are so many times where he hits something that I totally agree with. And then the couple of times he brings up Bitcoin, he completely misses. Like, there's one general idea that I want to bring up is that, and I think this is, you know, largely, I think crypto people have taken this and kind of just made it even more shallow of an idea than it already was, is the idea of trustlessness, of that we're going to just, everything is going to be trustless and we're going to have DAOs, you know, distributed autonomous organizations, and nobody's going to have to trust anything. And no, that's nonsense. The reason you have a base money that can't be screwed with, that is trustless as a settlement mechanism, is so that you can build trust, is so that you can build social capital on top of it. It's like trusting that someone else is literally doing the same math equation. Like, if you can't trust that you go into a gas station and 1 plus 9 equals 10 as well as your 1 plus 9 equals 10, if they think 1 plus 1 equals 10, then you're not going to get the change right. If you don't believe the same math, well, then you can't do business together. You can't even start to build a trusted relationship. And this goes for culture. This goes for all network technologies. Culture, religion, language, and money. And money is the ultimate network technology because it is the economic network. It is the thing that underpins the survivability of all of the other networks. So Elgato seems to think that, and this is largely, I assume this is probably because it's a disconnect where he has not, and I realize I assume it's a he, I'm not even sure, but regardless, I assume Elgato has not explored the ideas himself from a position of what do I think, like he's probably responding to what people say about it, which in the social sphere and like things that you would just normally run into are very shallow versions of the truth or of some extremely concrete or no wiggle room sort of mottos or taglines that are based on a principle of the way you should behave or think about what Bitcoin is. But from reading this, the way Elgato thinks, I think they would get it so quickly if they really thought about it, if they really tried to understand, tried to picture for themselves what Bitcoin is, rather than just assuming that the kind of flood of trash from social media is actually how to build. Like Bitcoin is very different from what people say Bitcoin is. And that's one of the crazy things about it, is that you can picture it from about 100,000 different angles and see something different. You know, it's that image, if you've ever seen the different people who are all around the elephant and they all have blindfolds on, and one of them's like, oh, it's like, it's big like a trunk, and you know, they're at the foot, and it's like, no, it's like a snake or whatever, you know, all of that stuff. It's if you look at it from different perspectives, you see something completely different. And I think one of those things like don't trust, verify, that's a core principle, it's a core tenet of how to build a game theoretically safe or secure consensus model, which is what Bitcoin is. And in that, there is a fundamental principle at the heart of Bitcoin, but that doesn't mean that you would just have an economy without trust. It's just the opposite. The economy is trust. It's speaking the same economic language so that you can then build a trusted relationship. And some of the things that he brings up in this piece are exactly where, especially as shortcomings in the free banking system that Elgato is explaining or basically exploring in this piece, are actually solved by the existence of Bitcoin, by a fundamental global independent settling mechanism. It's so funny that he thinks that, or seems to think that the PBDC system is something at odds with Bitcoin and a Bitcoin world, when actually I think it's more akin or closer to very much something we will see and are seeing, something that is building on top of Bitcoin right now. And in fact, we won't be able to sustain it. We won't be able to create it free of government without something like Bitcoin, without a form of collective communication, a base layer in order to get around the jurisdictional differences, rather than thinking that we need to go to some jurisdiction in order to achieve it. But I have so many points to pick out from this and interesting things to dive into and things that I want to expand on. So Elgato, if you happen to listen to this, I promise you, Bitcoin is endlessly more interesting and nuanced than the vapid crypto taglines that you seem to be, and I don't mean to be insulting or anything, that you just seem to be equating it with. And you seem to have a head on your shoulders. And ironically, you lay out here a perfect case for Bitcoin, in my opinion. You lay out a really good one, at least. Perfect is a pretty loaded word. But exactly what it enables and why trust is the most important commodity in this new economy, and why the system of Bitcoin is literally designed to allow this exact thing to flourish. And I want to argue, I want to make an argument, I want to make a case as to why that is, and why that the independent means of settlement is what we need to bridge trust boundaries, because trust does not scale, but Bitcoin does. You seem to think it doesn't, but I will explain why and how exactly it does, and the fact that it is right now. Not layer 2 will do it in 10 years. Layer 2 is doing it right now, but the trust is already the thing that is scaling. Layer 2 is just a transactional layer, and I can get into the differences there as well. There's so much nuance in this, and I'm really excited about it. This is going to be a fun guy's take. Also, you seem to be out of the loop on what layer two is, and I make sense from crypto. Like, crypto thinks that, like, oh, we're gonna have blockchains on top of blockchains on top of blockchains. No, yeah, that's not gonna happen. I mean, you could say to some degree there's an element of, like, conceptually it's kind of like that, but I really don't think that's how things are gonna play out. And I have that from empirical, like, boots on the ground, things that I am using today evidence, rather than pie in the sky, maybe it'll work this way. But regardless, I hope you listen to the next episode. This will be a guy's take as a follow-up to this read. And I applaud you for your article and the understanding of trust as it relates to markets and the model of free banking that you have laid out here. I think it's very interesting, and I think there are very few places where you have just missed important pieces of the puzzle that I would argue, and I think they can be easily filled in. So stick around for the next episode, and I will do my best to paint a picture of exactly how the world that you lay out is possible, and it is only because of Bitcoin. And I will address both of your footnotes as well. And also, I will say that you used one of my favorite Thomas Sowell quotes. In fact, I have a quote at the end of the show, at the end of the music, every single day, and I've got a number of great Thomas Sowell quotes. And that was certainly one that made the list. But anyway, another shout out to Clarkian. Thanks, dude, for sending me this article, because this is going to be fun. I'm excited. I've actually got a couple lined up that I want to read because I think they are very intriguing and very well thought out ideas. They're actually anti something that I think, but that really help to inform what Bitcoin can be and how Bitcoin can relate to these things, where I think a lot of people just have a very, like, app level understanding of what Bitcoin is. Like, it's a token, it's a toy, it's a thing that you can download on your phone, you can send back and forth, and it's super volatile, and you can speculate on it. And it's like, all of that is like surface cheap nonsense. You have to really dig to figure out what Bitcoin actually is, aside from, like, how you see it, like how you interact with it, so to speak, and what problem it is fundamentally solving, and also where in society that layer, that solution and problem lie. Anyway, I'm going into another tangent. We have to close this one out. Thank you guys so much for listening. Stick around. We got a guy's take to follow this one, and we got some really fun stuff lined up for next week. And Bitcoin 2023 is right around the corner. I am freaking out because I don't have plans, but I do now have a discount code for you guys. Code Bitcoin Audible gets you 10% off. You know, that's funny because it's the name of this show, and it's like the same code that I use for the other things. So all you have to do is remember that one thing, and it will, like, keep working. God, the convenience there is out of this world. And you know, you got to get yourself a Swan IRA. You gotta sign up with Swan. Swan is the best onboarding. If you haven't gotten into Bitcoin, Swan is the place to go. This is where I direct people because I know it's safe. I know they know what the hell they're talking about, and they're not going to lead you astray. Go to swanbitcoin.com, or actually swan.com. Both will take you to the same place. You want to keep it safe on a cold hard, on your tap sign, or on your CoinKite hardware device? And then you fix your fiat by using the Fold debit card and get sats back on everything in your life. And you're going to find a link to all that great stuff in the show notes also. It's like magic. All right, guys. I'm out. Today, I'm Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Shout out to the Audionauts and everybody out there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for going on this Bitcoin journey with me. This crazy, wild ride at the end of the modern financial system. Talk about some freaking fireworks on that one. It's going to be crazy. As Elgato said, it's going to break bigly. So I hope you're ready. And I hope you have your Bitcoin in cold storage. And I'll catch you on the other side. Until then, everybody, take it easy. I have never understood why it is greed to want to keep the money you have earned, but not greed to want to take somebody else's money. Thomas Sowell.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.